Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On May 3rd, Movement YVR, a transit advocacy group in Metro Vancouver, hosted a Jane's Walk in the Burnaby Heights neighborhood next to the Iron Workers Bridge, titled The Solution to North Shore Traffic. Jane's Walk is an annual festival of free, community-led walking conversations inspired by urban writer and activist Jane Jacobs, whose writings made significant impacts on sociology, economics, and urban planning. Traffic on the North Shore has been an ongoing point of discussion for decades, and the Iron Workers Bridge that connects the North Shore to the rest of Metro Vancouver is now considered as the most congested bridge in the region. Many solutions have been proposed, from building another bridge to the bus rapid transit expansion being planned for the North Shore to Burnaby. Movement YVR held this walk not to discuss these projects, but to talk about what can be done right now to address the area's traffic congestion. CJSF attended the walk and afterwards sat down for an interview with Dennis Agar, executive director of Movement, to learn more about why they held this walk and what they hoped to teach. Please take a listen.
There's always a lot of pressure and conversation around expanding highway capacity to the North Shore. It always comes up on talk radio and on Daily Hive and places like that. Like, we just need another bridge to the North Shore. And we have written op-eds and generally tried to inject some facts into that conversation, which is that if you allow more cars to get onto the North Shore, like, think about where they're going to go. Like, they have nowhere to go, right? Like, the streets on the North Shore are already full. Like, you could widen a bridge, but then you'd have to widen Marine, and you have to widen Lonsdale and widen Keith, and like, that's never, ever, ever going to happen. You're not going to be able to tear down tens of thousands of homes to widen a highway, nor would you want to. So it just takes a, like, the walk that we held on the weekend was to show, okay, this is how you can actually move more people on and off the shore in a less congested way. There are ways to basically tweak the design of the existing roads and highways to put buses in front of other cars and have them go speedy, even in, you know, even when there's a crash on the bridge, there are ways to keep the bus moving.
And the focus for this walk was particularly Second Narrows Iron Workers Bridge. Speak to me about that. One thing you mentioned that piqued my interest, because I had never considered it, was that the Iron Workers is at the end of its design life, I believe is what you said. If you could expand on that a bit.
You know, it was actually someone else on the tour who said that.
Okay.
But it's, I think that's becoming more widely known that, like, the TransLink is starting to think about replacing it. That's kind of what happened to the Patullo, right? Like, it was at the end of its design life and now it's the Stalo Austin Bridge. So we are going to have a conversation as a region about what to do with it. Of course, its life can be extended. Like, I've seen plenty of infrastructure go far beyond its design life. So it's not a hard and fast rule that, like, hey, we need to replace this bridge right away. There's still so many pieces that need to come together, like, basically funding, right? Like, you know, levels of government need to contribute funding to it. And then it's like, okay, what do we replace it with? Do we put rail on the bridge? Do we do all this stuff? And really my focus on the weekend was just about the stuff we can do before that happens. But I agree that definitely, like, we need to also think about what happens, you know, in the long term.
Is the BRT just the solution to this? Is that, I guess, the number one thing in your mind?
Okay, BRT is going to be awesome, but it can mean so many different things, right? Like, BRT can get watered down. It's at its root, what is BRT? It's just the idea of using buses to get as close to SkyTrain level of service as possible, like finding ways to make the bus fast, reliable, good stations, like basically all the things that SkyTrain has, but like simulated. You can do that through neighborhoods in the North Van and in Burnaby, where you have like the bus running down the middle of the street with stations. I don't know if we'll be able to do that on the bridge. It would be, I think, a pretty drastic step to put bus lanes along the entire bridge. I would love to see it. But the good news that I was trying to share in that talk is that we don't necessarily have to. For the most part, the bridge is actually uncongested on the deck itself. It's really, the challenge is really getting onto the bridge, all the queues on either side. And as if we can get the bus around those queues getting onto the bridge, then we can get those buses moving smoothly, faster than driving, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's an issue that I think on both major bridges that connect the North Shore to the rest of Metro Vancouver. You see in Lionsgate too, there is that bus priority lane, but there is a bottleneck that's kind of created before you get on the bridge. And
exactly,
that is what you're trying to address here, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's kind of a perfect setup for bus priority, right? Because you can, where you have room on land, you bottle up all those cars that are waiting to get on the bridge, and then you just have a bypass for the bus, like a queue jump lane where the bus can just get around the queue and then it merges back onto the bridge. That's exactly what we have on the Lionsgate. And we have it in one direction on the Second Narrows Bridge too, but we just need to finish the job by having it on all directions and designing it in a way that the bus can get around all of the queue, not just part of the queue.
Was there anything that, you know, there were a good amount of people in attendance for the talk and walk, and I'm wondering if there was anything that someone said that surprised you. You know, obviously this is something that you have looked into very heavily, but like, I'm just curious if there was anything of note that like other people contributed that you would want to share.
I mean, some people share their experiences with travel over the bridge, and it's always like kind of depressing sometimes to hear about how hard it can be to just get over that stupid bridge. There were clearly some like engineers in the audience because they had some really sophisticated questions. Like one thing that is worth thinking about, if you're going from Burnaby onto the bridge now, there's a bunch of queuing space where like you're basically just sitting and waiting. And one of the things I was saying is that you can use part of that queuing space to put a bus lane in. And one of them said, well, won't that just make the queue really long and stretch into Burnaby more often? Which, you know, is a potential likelihood. It doesn't necessarily mean that those people would get onto the bridge slower. It would just change where they queue. They're not just on these ramps. They're also overflowing into the city. And so you'd have to design the street to try and make that work. But also, we know that when we make changes to road infrastructure, like when a city like San Francisco or Seoul takes out a freeway, when they remove capacity, people adapt and things kind of just generally work out. They either change modes, they change the time of day that they travel, or they change the route.
What's getting in the way of a decision like, or changes like this being made to address congestion in the North Shore?
Sometimes when it depends on the issue, like sometimes I'll say funding, sometimes I'll say politics. In this particular situation, there's a certain ideology that engineers are taught in university that's really focused on cars and moving cars quickly and the high capacity, and there's textbooks and there's a whole ideology around it. And what I'm kind of saying goes against some of it. It would require some of those kind of classically trained engineers to go against some of their principles, like, oh, we're going to make this queue longer. Oh no, like this is actually going to backfire and it's going to make things worse for transit. We know that that's not true. We know that there are lots of places that have moved this conversation forward. And so part of it is really just getting some of those public servants on board at the province. And part of it is grabbing the attention of MLAs, provincial politicians, because they're the ones that actually have to go to the staff and say, like, this is part of your work plan. You have to figure this out. And, you know, the other thing I should just also say, too, is to give a lot of credit to provincial engineers, because they've implemented some really cool transit priority. I just don't understand why in some places we can have really cool transit priority and some places we don't, right? Like Highway 91 in Richmond has no transit priority whatsoever. But Highway 99 has some of the coolest transit priority in the region. There's a system of special signals that indicate when a bus is coming through the lane, and there's a special stop at Steveston Highway that is like really nicely designed, like there's signals that allow the bus to rejoin traffic. It's exquisite. But so I just want them to extend that to other highways in the region.
You had mentioned that, you know, the solution to an issue such as this, a bridge that is famously as congested as Second Narrows, is not for there to be a third bridge, not there for there to be more lanes. And you touched on that a little bit at the beginning of this interview, but I guess I would want you to explain that more for those who may, I guess, want a third bridge.
Yeah, no, and that's logical, right? Like, the story that we're told, and I think it just makes logical sense. If you have congestion on a highway and you want to get rid of that congestion, the answer that's always presented to us is to put more highways, either widen the highway we have or add a new one. But we can look at the places that have followed that logic, and we go to them and we look like, hey, did they actually solve traffic? Like, by adding highways, did they solve the problem? And the answer is always no. We can look at Los Angeles, we can look at Houston, we can look at Montreal, like places that widen highways and add highways. They might get some relief in the short term, but in the long term, you are giving a big signal to residents in that neighborhood, like, drive more, like, go out and get a car. You should drive to wherever you're trying to go, because ultimately in transportation, what you invest in is what people use. And in North America, we've just spent so long investing in this kind of infrastructure, wider highways, more highways, and we've had some really bad outcomes. So there's, like, you know, it's not that new. Like, I think in 20 years old, a paper by Duranton and Turner, who are actually economists, and they've studied, you know, places all over the world and determined that for every additional, like a 1% expansion in road space, you get a 1% expansion in driving, people driving. And, like, if it were 1-to-1, that would actually be kind of okay, like, not great, but it's certainly not, like, it doesn't solve the problem, it just stays neutral. But what that means in practice is that, okay, you've got all this new space on the highway. Like, imagine, you know, you add extra lanes to the Second Narrows, and so that highway is flowing faster, but then you have to get off the Second Narrows, right? Like, you have to either take Main Street or Mountain Highway or Lynn Valley Road to get into the neighborhoods. And so you're putting 1% more cars through those streets too. And then you just keep going, you know, another percent here, another percent there, onto roads that can't be expanded. And then you end up with gridlock in the neighborhoods. So, I'm, you know, pleading with North Shore residents basically to think about it in those terms, to think about, like if you, there will be unintended consequences if you get a new bridge on the North Shore, and you're really not going to like them, because it's ultimately going to eliminate what people like about the North Shore, like nature, right? Quiet, trees, hiking. Adding more cars to the equation is going to detract from all that.
Once again, that was our conversation with Movement YVR's executive director, Dennis Agar, on the Jane's Walk that they held recently on May 3rd, titled The Solution to North Shore Traffic. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
My name is Paola Quiroz Cruz. I am one of the educators at the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office here at the SFU.
And what is this table that you have set up here today?
So, as you know, May 5th is the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, Girls, and Two-Spirit People. So, as a non-Indigenous, you know, individuals who work at the SVSBO, we started this initiative like 2-3 years ago. So what you are seeing today is a collaboration between the SVSBO, also the SFSS Women's Center, the Gender, Sexuality, and Women's Studies Department, to honoring Red Dress Day. Today is a time to remember, attempt to reflect on the lives of, as I say before, the missing and murdered indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people who have been lost to colonial and gender-based violence and that continue being disappeared and being murdered every day in this city and in this country.
Mm-hmm. Could you explain to me just the significance of the red dress in particular in this case?
Yeah, so the Red Dress Project was a public art installation that was created by Métis artist Jane Black in, I think it was in 2010, to raise this awareness of the missing and murdered indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit people. So he started with like putting empty red dresses hung in public spaces to symbolize the absence of those who are no longer here and creating more awareness. So then, as you see here, we have few of those red dresses, and that's one of the invitations also for people when they ask themselves how I can participate in this if I cannot attend any of the memorials today that are happening all around Vancouver. So one way is that they can wear red, but also they can hang a red dress in their window, at their balcony. If they don't have a red dress, they can paint one, they can put it up there as well.
What sort of resources and things are available at the tables here today?
Yeah, so we have a resource that the Indigenous Student Center create to kind of explain folks who don't know about May 5th what it is. Then we also have it's more like a children's book, just to share the story of the red dress and how this person is preparing that morning to go to one of the marches. And then this little girl is asking her mom, why is that we're going there? And it's because one of the aunties, the sister of this mother, is no longer there. So it's like that story. So then that's another way for people to interact with the table. We have some pins, so then people can come and make their own pin. We have like some coloring pages from different indigenous artists. And then we also invite people to bring something to the table as an offering for those who are no longer here. But if they don't have that, they can take one of the roses or the petals that we have on the table. And the invitation is that they can go somewhere in nature and they think and reflect of all these women and girls and Two-Spirit folks who are not with us, and they kind of lay the flower on nature on behalf of them. Yes, we have also some postcards that are like red dresses postcards, let's see. And then we're inviting people to write down their daily commitment. What is that they can do on their daily lives to end this epidemic that has been impacting Canada for so many years.
Hmm. You know, for people that do need it, because, you know, this day is one that is tied to a lot of hardship and a lot of trauma and a lot of ongoing issues that we're still dealing with. What sort of resources at SFU, either through the SVSSPO or any other organization, can people reach out to if they need help?
Yeah, so if there are Indigenous students or faculty and staff that they need support, today at the Indigenous Student Center, there are some care circles happening, and they are going to do some embroidery as well. They can go any other day, not necessarily today. And then also they can come to the SVSPO, the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, if they need support and guidance. And then we have create kind of like a resource page where you can see more organizations around Metro Vancouver where folks can access those organizations if they don't feel comfortable either coming here to the ISC or the SVSPO.
What do you hope people who visit the table, like what do you hope one of their, I guess, main takeaways are? Like, what do you hope they take away from what you've set up here essentially today?
Yeah, I think that the most important part is to remember that Indigenous people are not part of history. They're part of our daily lives. They are the stewardships of this land. And unfortunately, women, girls, and two-spirit people, and other folks as well, continue being impacted by colonialism and by what I say before, this epidemic. So what I hope is that we think and take a moment to think, hey, maybe the person that is sitting next to me on the bus is an Indigenous person that may have a family member that is no longer here, just to kind of connect with this present and this reality. So that this is not something that happened 100 years ago, 50 years ago. This is happening every day in Canada. So then that's my hope, our hope, is that we leave this space thinking, what can I do? This, I cannot continue being just like a passive bystander. I cannot continue, laughing about very problematic jokes about Indigenous people in this land. I cannot continue just looking on the side and just maybe enjoying the beauty of the city but not thinking who were or who are the stewards of this land. So it's just connecting deeply with the present and what is that we can do to create a commitment, and also invite people to be more curious, so then maybe they can read the final report from the National Inquiry on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, Girls, and Two-Spirit. Or, as I say, they can hang a red dress, like small actions, right? They can attend any of the events today, or they can start donating to initiatives, Indigenous initiatives, like the Downtown Eastside Women's Center, the Native Women's Association of Canada, or the Aboriginal Mother Center Society. This is just to name few, because there are so many other initiatives out there. So that in some way you live, reflect, but you take action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a period of reflection, of mourning, but action also needs to occur, and that's part of what this table and this event that you've put on is trying to encourage.
Yes, and we are also, since last year, we decided to expand it to other campuses. So it's happening in Vancouver. In Vancouver, it's more like a self-reflect table because we don't have volunteers there, but then folks can interact with the table still. And we have one in Surrey as well. And then I think the other commitment is like, what is that we can do as a non-Indigenous folks, right? So it is not on Indigenous people to educate us on this day. It is on us to learn more about it, yeah.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. If you missed your favorite program, don't worry. You can listen to podcasts of our program at cjsf.ca.
I suspend my judgments. has to spend my. The city drags its feet across its mauve council chamber carpets. There's a monument to remembering and so much money to forgetting. And other than a categorical error, things stand in pretty good order. The force of all my conviction is so easily denied. And the shit under the floor flows out to the Livingstone Trail sewage lagoon. I suspend my judgments. I suspend my. I suspend my judgments. I suspend my. One center's periphery is another periphery's center. If they just leave their door unbarred to me, I swear I wouldn't covet my neighbor. Cannot believe judgments. I suspend my. I suspend my judgments. I suspend
you have tuned in to Open Mic on CJSF Radio, broadcasting on 90.1 FM from Burnaby Mountain, BC.